Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 1965, the average CEO made 20 times the average worker. Today, CEOs are making about 273 times the average worker. According to Equilar, an executive compensation analysis firm, the median CEO pay package last year was $15 million. That is a 16% increase from 2011. McDonald's, which has received widespread attention because of recent protests by low-wage workers, is an example of the huge and growing CEO-employee wage gap. McDonald's CEO Donald Thompson's hourly compensation is almost 1,200 times the average McDonald's worker. An average worker makes $7.73 an hour, while Donald Thompson makes $9,247 an hour. And for the first time ever, the 10 highest paid CEOs in the United States received more than $100 million in compensation last year, according to GMI ratings. Facebook's co-founder Mark Zuckerberg took the top spot. His total compensation last year was $2.3 billion. That's more than $6 million every day. So on today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about soaring CEO paychecks and compensation packages. Why are these numbers rising so quickly? What are the underlying reasons behind this? And what, if anything, could be done about it? What would you do? Dean Baker is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research and co-author of Getting Back to Full Employment, A Better Bargain for Working People. He also blogs at Beat the Press, where he discusses media's coverage of economic issues. And he joins us from Washington. Hi, Dean. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Nice to have you. And according to a recent report by the Institute for Policy Studies, the CEOs of the top six publicly held fast food chains pocketed more than $183 million in fully deductible performance pay, lowering their company's IRS bills by $64 million over the past 2 years. Sarah Anderson is Global Economy Project Director of the Institute for Policy Studies. She's lead author of the Executive Excess Report, and her recent report is titled Fast Food CEOs Rake in Taxpayer-Funded Pay. And she also joins us from Washington. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be here with both you and Dean.
Well, it's great to have you. And, you know, there's so many studies out now about CEO pay. And, Sarah, since you're the author of this latest one, and we talked about it actually last week when we did a show about the growing low-wage worker movement. The numbers are out there, but how do you really wrap your arms around this? Because these are just really massive numbers. I mean, when you say something like Mark Zuckerberg brings home $6 million a day, how do you even make sense of something like that?
I know. It's ridiculous. And what I've found over the years is often people react most strongly to numbers that maybe aren't so big, but just point at the absurdity of the situation. You know, the $5,000 golden shower curtain that Dennis Kozlowski had at Tyco before he went to prison for driving that company into the ground and all the corruption and fraud there. Things like that are what really stick in people's minds and make them see how these are people who are really living on another planet than ordinary Americans. That's just how extreme the situation has gotten.
Well, how do you explain the rise? Because the New York Times had a piece about CEO pay, and Gretchen Morgenson, I mean, you can actually read the shock in her words when she said that in 2012, we saw a 16% increase from 2011. So median CEO pay last year was $15 million at a time when so many people are seeing their paychecks shrink or so many people don't have a paycheck at all. But how do you explain that increase? Mm-hmm.
There are a number of explanations, and maybe I'll go in a little more detail into the issue that we were looking at in this recent report on the fast food industry. And this is one of the reasons why CEO pay is so much higher today is that there's actually an incentive in the tax code that encourages corporations to hand out big fat pay packages. It sounds absolutely ludicrous and perverse, but actually under our tax code, the more corporations pay their CEO, the less they pay in taxes. And that's because of this loophole that allows companies to deduct unlimited amounts from their corporate income taxes for the cost of executive pay as long as it's so-called performance pay. Performance merit-based pay. And they can come up with very bogus criteria for, you know, what is understood as performance pay, but allows them to make all of this pay fully deductible. And just to give a concrete example, we looked at the CEOs of the top fast food companies, and the one that was the most dramatic example was Yum Brands. This is the company that owns Taco Bell, KFC, and Pizza Hut. And we found that over the years 2011 and 2012, their CEO, David Novak, made $94 million in this fully deductible so-called performance pay, and that works out to a $33 million taxpayer subsidy to Yum Brands just for this one guy's pay. And so, you know, it's not a reflection, this growing pay, necessarily of, boy, these guys are just doing such a great job and, you know, earning all this new pay. There are very concrete things in our tax code and in other policies that have driven this trend.
Who put this in the tax code? How did it get there?
Yeah, it came into the tax code in the Clinton administration at a time when there was also a lot of public outrage over excessive CEO pay. And so it was well intended. Robert Reich, the former labor secretary, said he came up with this idea of capping the tax deductibility of executive pay at $1 million. But then corporations lobbied to get this loophole in there for the so-called performance pay, and that's what just opened the door to all these huge stock option grants and other things they could count as performance pay that just ballooned corporate CEO pay packages.
And so then
it would be such a simple fix, and there is legislation pending that would just get rid of that exemption for performance pay. It would raise $50 billion over the next 10 years, and it would be at least one concrete thing we could do to turn around this ridiculous trend on CEO pay.
So when they lobbied, they got Republicans and Democrats on board, and then the Clinton administration obviously was also on board eventually.
Yes, they accepted it. And Robert Reich has written, you know, quite regretfully about that decision to cave in on that loophole.
So, Dean, when you take a look at this, how do you explain the rise in CEO pay?
Well, what I think is striking here is you don't really have a market relationship. You know, in principle, corporate boards are supposed to be working for the shareholders, and they're supposed to take a look at the CEO, and they're supposed to be asking the same questions as the CEO. The CEO does about those workers at McDonald's. You know, can we get them for $8 an hour? Can we get them for $7.50 an hour? You know, can we cut their pay? Can we outsource to China? They might not ask that about McDonald's, but they'll ask that about everything else. Boards are supposed to say that about the CEOs, but they don't. And the reason is because basically the boards are friends of the CEOs. Basically, this is this cushy relationship where people sit on corporate boards. They often get paid, I shouldn't say often, they almost always get paid six-figure salaries. They come to, you know, four, five, six meetings a year. And, you know, basically they're all buddies. So they don't really have an incentive to do what, you know, what they're supposed to do. I mean, if you just read, you know, an economics textbook, they're supposed to go to the CEO and go, okay, you're getting $15 million. There are CEOs that do every bit as good, you know, just from the standpoint of getting stock returns. We could find CEOs in European companies, Japanese companies, Korean companies. They work for a tenth as much as you.
Hmm.
Well, why should we pay you $15 million? We get someone for $1.5 million, they'll do a better job in many cases. But they never do that because they're their friends. You know, would you have your friends over and then they suddenly throw you out of your house? That's not going to happen.
Because that's how the compensation is ultimately agreed upon, is through the board.
The board is, yeah, board basically answer, the CEO basically answers to the corporate board. And because you have, you know, this dispersion of ownership, this, it's kind of funny because it actually could be a conservative position. Conservatives yell about government, blah, blah, blah. Same thing with corporate government. You have very dispersed ownership. It's very, very difficult for shareholders to get together and go, hey, we're being ripped off by these people. Almost never happens. So basically, CEOs are writing their own checks.
So, for example, the New York Times wrote about this analysis by MVC Associates, and they looked at financial statements and executive pay and found that Google and Qualcomm actually pay their workers possibly what they're worth based on what they make. But when you look at Xerox, for example, the company paid its top managers $165 million over 5 years, even though its economic profits amounted to a negative $1.65 billion. So you're losing money, and then the CEO is still making a lot of money. How often does that happen?
It happens very frequently, and all the time, you know, you'll get, you know, apologies from boards that, oh, we didn't expect this and that, you know, and, you know, it's easy to design pay packages, and really if the board members aren't capable of designing a pay package that, you know, at least ensures some minimal performance from the CEO, they're really out of their league then, because, you know, they're getting paid lots of money for this, you know, they act... You know, these people act like they're being good citizens. You know, it is kind of incredible. I like to beat up on Erskine Bowles, you know, who's famous for sitting on the deficit commission and keeps running around yelling we have to cut Social Security and Medicare. He sits on probably 4, 5, or 6 corporate boards. He was on General Motors when it went bankrupt. He was on Morgan Stanley when it was bailed out by the government. He got paid, I think, $350 million for sitting on the board of a company that would have gone bankrupt absent the government's help. So he does these like it's a public service. Well, $350,000 is more than the vast majority of us make in a year. In fact, it's more than many people make in 10 years. Mm. He gets this for, you know, a few weekends of work. And, you know, what did he do? You know, what was he doing? Was he upset when the thing almost went under? You know, I mean, did he say, okay, we got to fire our CEO, we got to revamp everything? You know, there's no evidence the guy suffered any consequence at all, gave it any thought. So it really is incredible. They're the ones who are supposed to be putting a check on CEO pay, and, you know, that's clearly not happening. They're just letting, you know, they're just handing over, you know, the shareholders' money. I might not care in a lot of ways about the shareholders, but I do care about, you know, people making a lot of money. That, at the end of the day, does come out of all of our pockets.
And so, Dean, you're saying it's a mixture of the board, which tends to be still a boys' club, and they determine the CEO pay, and then the tax incentives that Sarah just talked about. Is there anything else you can add to this about why CEO pay is so high right now?
Well, the tax incentives certainly make it easier, you know, so basically they know that they could write off roughly a third of that, so it certainly makes it easier for them to do it. I mean, part of it, and again, I don't want to glorify, you know, kind of the previous era of capitalism, because there were many problems with it, but you did have, more oversight, certainly where you have unions. You know, you have at least someone who has a long-term stake in the company, because now you have this idea, you know, people are there at the company for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and they go somewhere else, they retire, whatever it might be. There's not an idea of someone having a long-term stake in the company. So if you have a CEO that comes there and, you know, pockets, you know, 40, 50, 60 million and then heads out the door, that's kind of standard fare. There's not someone with an idea that they're going to be there for a long period of time. So that also is a change from where we were, say, you know, 40, 30 years ago.
And Sarah, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that another change from that era is that the top marginal tax rate is so much lower today than it was in the decades of the 50s through the 70s. And so back then it didn't make a whole lot of sense to add a, you know, few extra million on top of an CEO's already quite large pay package, because most of that would just be taxed away anyway. You know, under Eisenhower, the top marginal tax rate was 91%. Now it's 39.6%. So there's more of an incentive in that way to keep handing out these huge packages. And just also to add on what Dean said about how there's just the idea that we have a pay-for-performance system for CEOs is just a complete crock. And Bloomberg did very good research earlier this year looking at how companies where the CEO is performing poorly, how they easily can just rig the rules in order for their CEO to qualify for this fully deductible performance pay. And they looked in depth at a couple of companies. One was Hovnanian Enterprises, which is a big, you know, home builder, and they were doing really crappy after the crash. And they just simply changed their performance criteria for their executive pay 3 times in the 5 years after the mortgage crisis, just to make sure that their executives would continue to get their performance pay. Meanwhile, you know, the rest of the country is suffering from the mortgage crisis, but they made sure that their top brass still did very well.
Oh, we have a caller who wants to talk about a performance pay scandal, and if you'd like to join us, we're talking today about CEO pay. What explains the rise? Last year, the average package was $15 million. That's a 16% increase from 2011, and for the first time ever, the 10 highest-paid CEOs in the United States received more than $100 million in compensation. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg took the top spot. He makes more than $6 million every day. So what do you think should be done about this? What would you do about about this. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And we'll talk about the legislation that Sarah mentioned earlier about how to rein in these tax incentives. But also, if you have any other questions about why this is happening and why do you think these numbers are going up, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Sarah Anderson is Global Economy Project Director with the Institute for Policy Studies, and Dean Baker is Co-Director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And let's hear from David in San Francisco. Hi, David.
Yeah, morning, Rose, and your guests. I think it was Dean that raised the issue about Erskine Bowles, and I had forgotten about that fella. Apparently, he's considered a Democrat and was somewhat the guy who taught Bill Clinton about, Gatt and NAFTA and the whole globalization economics. So it might explain, Erskine Bowles specifically, might explain why the Democrats are so cowardly about dealing with some of these issues. They seem to be going through this training regimen that doesn't really live up to any actual performance standards, and so the economy, as the budgets are being put together for the nation, they're not really living up to any actual standards, but this artificial standard. But I wanted to raise the idea that this, the performance standards, this whole topic is really an excellent one for nonprofits to look at, because if basically we're being told as nonprofits that it's not cost effective to have schools anymore, it's not cost effective to have clinics or social spending for various projects, that life itself is not cost effective, we need to actually get back into changing those standards to authentic ones. It seems like this topic is a really excellent one for nonprofits to look at in the future and hold to the campaign year.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. And since you brought up the Clinton administration, and I'm sure we'll talk about this throughout the show because so much happened then, but there's a great book by Robert Scheer that looks at all of these issues called The Great American Stick-Up, How Reagan Republicans and Clinton Democrats Enriched Wall Street While Mugging Main Street. And Dean, what are your thoughts on David's call?
Well, I think we certainly should be looking very carefully at, executive compensation, how they're basically not being held accountable. Certainly the tax code's an important point. And, really going after, one of the things we're hoping to have up and running in the not-too-distant future is a site we're going to call Director Watch, which is going to focus on the directors at major companies and how companies have done under their reign and how much they've collected as directors, because the idea Erskine Bowles is someone who you'd really want to trot out in public as an honorable figure, given that the guy's pocketed hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of dollars from companies that have gone bankrupt. You wouldn't think that. I kind of think of him sort of in the league of Bernie Madoff. Would you want to pull him out and go, well, Mr. Madoff supports my agenda for deficit reduction? Maybe it's a good agenda, but not because Bernie Madoff supports it. And people should really be talking about someone like Erskine Bowles in the same way.
And Dean, I was actually going to ask you about Director Watch, but you've got an Indiegogo. Actually, you raised all of the money for Director Watch. I just checked out the Indiegogo site.
Yeah, we're in the process of getting it together. We have a lot. We have most of it ready. We just have to order, get out the final kinks, and we're hoping to be able to launch shortly in the new year. So, what we're going to have on the site, people will be able to click on either by director or by company. We have the Fortune 100 fully listed, and many directors from other companies as well. And we're hoping eventually to have the Fortune 500, so you'd be able to click on General Electric or Xerox or, Facebook, whatever big company, see who the directors are, how much they got paid, how the other companies, because you have many directors that are directors on three or four or five companies. Hmm. It's really quite a racket.
Yeah.
So how those companies perform.
I always wondered also, what is the role on the board and how much do they get paid? For example, Yahoo's CEO, Marissa Meyer, she's on one of the top 100 lists, one of the very few women making about $35 million a year. She's on the board of Walmart. So what is her role, for example, and how much do these CEOs get paid to sit on boards?
Well, in principle, they're supposed to have, they're the ones that, in effect, have full oversight of the company. They're supposed to see what the CEOs do, what they're, first off what they're paid, but, you know, what their general strategy is, you know, are they complying with, you know, good business practices, you know, presumably at least following the law in general, things like that. And they're almost always paid six figures, and often, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000. And, you know, again, very often when you look at what they actually do, when you have companies that are clearly, you know, poorly run by any standard. So I'm not even saying, you know, oh, do they treat their workers the way I would like them to treat them? I just mean, are they making money? You know, are they doing that? Oftentimes they're not, and the directors still pocket their pay, and, you know, they walk away happy. Their CEOs walk away happy. Everyone else associated with the company gets burned.
And I made a mistake. Actually, Marissa Mayer makes $36 million a year, not $35 million a year. Sarah, what else can you tell us about the CEOs who sit on boards?
Well, I think Dean has described the situation very well. It is a situation where I scratch your back, you scratch mine. These are often CEOs of other companies who have zero interest, personal interest in rocking the boat when it comes to issues like executive pay. There have been some, you know, minor reforms to try to ensure that they're independent, but it's been meaningless. And so it really is time, I think, to stop thinking that corporate boards might change this problem, to stop waiting for shareholders through non-binding votes that they can somehow change this problem. It's really a time for effective public policy. You know, I've been working on this issue for 20 years, and for so many years, I constantly heard people say, oh, CEO doesn't affect us. You know, when you complain about it, it's just because you want to be as rich as those guys. It's not a problem that affects the rest of society. Well, now, in the wake of the financial crisis, I don't hear that much anymore, because it's widely acknowledged that executive pay practices were a factor that encouraged the recklessness that got us into that mess that destroyed so many people's livelihoods. And so this is something that affects all of us. And we as taxpayers, you know, as a first step, should make sure that none of our money is going to actually encourage excessive pay. I mentioned the one loophole that could be closed, but we also have special treatment for hedge fund managers who are often also up there with Zuckerberg, making over $1 billion a year. And a lot of that is taxed as capital gains, so they get a tax break that way. There are so many practical things that we could be doing that isn't about necessarily putting an iron ceiling on how much CEOs can make in this country, but would go a long way towards encouraging a different system.
What is the name of the legislation that would rein in those tax incentives that you talked about earlier?
It has been introduced by Senators Jack Reed and Blumenthal, and it has a name that goes something like the Stop Subsidizing Multi-Million Dollar Corporate Bonuses Act. It's S-1476. It was introduced fairly recently, and so there's a push going on right now to get more co-sponsors to that, so I would encourage people to weigh in with their representatives. On the House side, Barbara Lee from California, from your part of the world, has a very similar bill. It's called the Income Equity Act, and that would also eliminate this performance pay loophole and get at this whole issue of taxpayer subsidies for excessive pay.
And how many co-sponsors are we talking? Is it 10 or 100, I mean, on these bills?
Well, the Senate one, you know, the Senate is smaller, and you know, it's just getting going. So I think right now there's probably only four or five members on so far, but the real big push hasn't begun yet. So it's a really good time for people to raise this issue.
All right. So we'll put links to these bills on our website right after the show. Today, we are continuing our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about soaring CEO paychecks and compensation packages. The average package last year was $15 million. That's a 16% increase from 2011. And we're talking about this with Sarah Anderson, Global Economy Project Director of the Institute for Policy Studies, Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Why do you think CEO pay is rising so quickly? What do you think about it? If you're a CEO or maybe sit on a board, we'd love to hear from you. And what, if anything, would you do about this? What do you think should be done? This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your your call on Local Public Radio if you have a perspective that has not yet been heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered. Please get in touch by calling 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can also email your question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Also a reminder that this evening at 5 o'clock, following all things considered, station manager Matt Martin will be on the air with the annual manager's report to listeners. Join Matt live tonight at 5, right after All Things Considered.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about what it will take to make a real transition to alternative energy. We'll be joined by two UC Berkeley professors, an economist and an energy and nuclear engineer, about what they think we should be doing. And are you still optimistic after all of these years of very real calls for alternatives and to tackle climate change? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the massive rise in CEO pay over the years. $15 million was the average executive compensation package last year, a 16% increase from 2011. We've got a number of charts on our website. The AFL-CIO has a list of the highest paid CEOs. Oracle's Larry Ellison is at the top with $96 million. Tesla Motors' Elon Musk, $78 million. You've got a number of, well, they're almost all men, except for Yahoo's Marissa Meyer at $38 million. But you can find that at yourcallradio.org. So why do you think that the numbers are rising so drastically? What questions do you have? What should be done about this? If you could do something about this, what would you do? The Swiss wanted to put a cap on CEO pay, allowing CEOs to make just 12 times the average worker, but 65% of voters shot that down just recently. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. Today we're joined by Sarah Anderson, Global Economy Project Director of the Institute for Policy Studies. She's lead author of the Executive Excess Report. Her recent report is Fast Food CEOs Rake in Taxpayer-Funded Pay. Dean Baker is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, co-author of Getting Back to Full Employment, A Better Bargain for Working People. He also writes the Beat the Press blog, where he discusses the media's coverage of economic issues, and they're in the process of putting together a new project called Director Watch. And Sarah, since I often bring up the fact that so few women are on these lists, we just got an email from Paula who said, we know that almost none of these people are women, but what about people of color?
Well, we tried to look into that issue this year because in September, we released our 20th annual Executive Excess Report. And so we were looking back at the highest paid CEOs of the past 20 years. And we wanted to do that analysis on diversity. And we weren't able to get the information we needed to do that kind of race, you know, based analysis. So I can't really speak to that. There are a few out there, but you know, certainly they're in the minority. On the women one, we were looking at the top 20 highest paid CEOs each year for the past 20 years, and only 5 of those slots were made up by women, which was, you know, I knew it was going to be low, but I think that was even smaller than I'd expected. And a couple of them had actually gotten fired, so they didn't last long.
Oops. Well, you know, the other question I have that I think is really interesting is when you have a woman or a person of color take the helm, does much change, or does the game stay the same?
I don't think it changes a whole lot under our current system. I think we need to just, you know, change the incentive structure before we'll get much change in the behavior of CEOs. And I would just point to Carly Fiorina, who is the head of Hewlett-Packard, who came in like, you know, Annie, get your gun, and just, you know, laid off workers left and right, and was known as quite a ruthless CEO that and made decisions that really hurt the company in the long term. So I think the focus really needs to be on the incentive structure. And right now there's no incentive to, or not enough incentive, certainly, for CEOs to think about the long-term health of their company and the long-term health of this economy. And another issue I wanted to bring up is the CEO-to-worker pay ratio. You mentioned it in the beginning, but there's just more and more research out there showing that when you have wide divides between the CEO and worker pay within a company, it's just bad for business. You know, it hurts worker morale. It contributes to higher turnover rates and lower productivity. And so there's a really strong, just straight-out business argument as to why we should be bringing down those top-level pay packages. And we did have one good, interesting reform in the Dodd-Frank legislation on financial reform that is going to require all companies to report their CEO-to-worker pay ratio. It's been stalled for the past 3 years, but now it does look like the SEC is moving on this. And it'll be interesting to see what impact that has. It's just a disclosure rule right now, but I think eventually it could lead to, you know, the use of that very important benchmark of CEO to worker pay in other ways. We could offer preferences in government contracting to companies if they meet various, you know, good behavior criteria, like having low CEO to worker pay ratios. So that is one positive thing I will point to that's been happening in D.C. lately.
All right. Well, we've got full lines. So let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good program.
Thank you.
When I hear about the millions and even billions, I guess, being made by the CEOs, my mind just kind of numbs over at the money. It's just incredible. But I think it's also important to keep in mind or keep the compensation in context with what ordinary people are making. Warren Buffett famously said that soldiers get rewarded with medals and teachers get rewarded with thank you notes, while the CEOs of big corporations get millions of dollars. And I think that the contrast between what the CEOs are getting and what the people who really do the hard work in this country get is really needs to be highlighted. And we need to find a way not only to reduce the compensation for the obscene compensation for the CEOs, but also to increase the rewards for the people who do the hard work. I don't know where this country would be without the hard work of our soldiers in Iraq, in Afghanistan. I think they really rescued our country from a disaster that Bush set us into. And nurses also need to be better compensated, and teachers definitely need to be better compensated, and on down the line.
So, John, how would you go about doing that?
That's a good question. I wish I had the answer. I think one of the things that we can do is through tax policy. Mm-hmm. When we have jobs that are being done well, you know, teachers, sanitation workers, nurses, and we know these people are not being well compensated, I think we need to find a way in our tax policies to better reward them. Maybe we can find ways to give them breaks on housing and different other benefits like that.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. We'll get a response after we take a few more calls. Let's hear from William in Belvedere. Hi, William.
Yes, with respect to what the gentleman said, we need to make a change in our tax policy. I'd like to remind him that it's not our tax policy. The policy is written by the people who receive large campaign donations from the people who want the tax policy to be written in a particular way. The guest, I believe her name is Anderson, Sarah Anderson.
Yes.
She pointed to two things that I think are quite important. She said we have to change public policy, and we have to, but I think that what we really have to change, it's great to change public policy if you can figure out how to do it. I can't figure out how to do it with the structure that exists, the economic structure. But I think we have to change private policy. That means, or personal policy. If we, and Dean Baker made the point that they're going to be publishing the amounts that the CEOs get. So if you don't like the amount that they're being paid, don't shop there. Don't buy the product. Let that be one of your criteria. And I'd appreciate, because, I think we can do relatively little in terms of law because of the campaign contributions, etc. But we can definitely control what we do. And I'd appreciate the perspective of the guest.
All right. Thank you, William. We've got sort of a related caller. So we'll take George in San Francisco, and then we'll get responses. Hi, George.
Hi. Well, this is a question of maybe it's, two-handedness. On the one hand, somewhere over the horizon, you know, there's philanthropy. And the people that are making millions and billions now will have a pile of money that they can invest in philanthropic enterprises when they retire, et cetera. They can do a Bill Gates. On the other hand, we want that money. That's not just their salary. Mm. That's where all of everybody else's salaries went. And some of that money belongs to the workers in the corporations that are making these cats fat. So when we look at it from the point of view of how much of the payroll and all compensation, the entire package of compensation, goes to, say, the top 10 executives ranked by salary. If you said how much, if it was in a cereal box, we would know where to look on it to find out if the product is organic and to find out to what extent it is and to read the fine print. If there was a sticker somewhere on the corporation that said the top 10 executives get 11% of the total compensation of this corporation, or they get 2%, or they get 30%, that would tell us something. And if we could start labeling it, we could start doing what the other callers are saying, which is possibly exerting public pressure.
All right. Thank you for calling in. Dean Baker, what are your thoughts? I mean, a lot of questions about what we can do, and then also what it will take to change the tax system.
Yeah, well, a lot of good points raised. First off, the last caller, I think may have been the caller before, was making the point that this is our money, that, you know, when you have CEOs that are making this huge pay, that comes from somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people are saying you're just jealous. Well, maybe people are, but who cares? I mean, the point is they're getting money from somewhere. It's not manna from heaven. So it's coming out of workers' pockets. We're paying more for the product. Shareholders aren't getting the returns they should get. This is coming from somewhere. Another really important point, and Sarah alluded to this, CEO pay is setting pay scales throughout the economy. It was, I'm forgetting where I saw this, but somewhere they had this article about top-paid university presidents last year, and they were all well over $1 million. In fact, the highest paid was over $3 million. And, you know, you're president of a big university, you go, well, if I were running a company this size, I'd be making $10 million. And, of course, that's true. So, you know, giving the university presidents $2-3 million, well, that makes sense. Same with charities. You know, you have these big charities where people get, you know, well over $1 million. And then, you know, needless to say, they're subordinates. You know, the next in line is getting something comparable, less, but something comparable. This leads to the sort of massive wage inequality that we've seen over the last three decades, because it's not just the people at the top, it's the people near them. And again, it's not just in the corporate world. It heads over into other sectors of the economy. So it's a really big deal. How do you do something? I'm really looking to put pressure at the boards. That's a point of leverage. That's where people are basically breaking the law. When you have someone like Erskine Bowles who pockets $350,000 in Morgan Stanley, what do you do, Mr. Bowles? Your company just went under, or would have had the government not bailed it out. What were you doing? You know, he's going, I'm just pocketing my $350,000. Are you looking out for the shareholders? Are you an idiot? You know, I mean, that's where I think there's a point of pressure. And one group of people who are in a position to apply it very directly are the pension funds. This is their job. You know, you have a lot of people tell the pension funds they're not supposed to be activists. That's garbage. This is literally their job. They're supposed to make sure that the company is well run. If you're giving a CEO, tens of millions of dollars a year, and that CEO can't show they're producing anything like that, you can get a European CEO for a tenth the pay, he'll do a better job, then that person shouldn't be there. The other directors shouldn't be there if they don't want to throw them out. So I think that's my idea in Director Watch. Try and put pressure there, seeing that as a pressure point, hitting these directors, saying, what are you doing for your money? Are you just stealing? Make it so these people are outlaws, because that's what they are.
Well, and Dean, what about, because you closely monitor media coverage of these issues, and we often hear that we're broke. City budgets are strapped. NPR had a piece this morning about people who are losing their jobs, and they focused on a woman out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who was a volunteer coordinator at a domestic violence shelter. But because of budget cuts, her job got slashed, and now she can't find another job. But do you think the media make these connections, and how do you think people understand why these cuts are actually happening?
No, I mean, the media coverage has been horrible. It was horrible in years leading to the crisis because they didn't talk about the housing bubble, which, you know, was like this big surprise for them. No, it wasn't a surprise for anyone who watches The Economy, but it was a surprise to our top reporters at The New York Times, Washington Post, NPR, et cetera. And they're not doing it now. We're poor. The real story here is we're incredibly rich, and that's why we have so much unemployment. I mean, it's a very simple picture. We're producing enough for at least most people to be housed, have medical care, have food, clothes, the things we need. Obviously, you know, we have poor people who need more, but we're able to produce whatever we're producing and still have roughly 9 million people who'd like to have jobs but don't. Why? Because there's nothing for them to do. This is a story of, you know, really induced poverty. There's no excuse for it, but it's reported. You know, we just turn things 180 degrees on their head and say, oh, my God, you know, another time, sure, we'd love to do X, Y, and Z, but we just can't afford it now. Well, we can't afford it now because basically we have a policy that deliberately deprives us of our ability to produce goods and services that people actually need. We should have learned this lesson in the Great Depression. You know, when I read Keynes as an undergrad, I'm going, wow, you know, too bad he didn't write Yarrow's book in 1937, The General Theory. And I always thought back then, wow, too bad he didn't write it 10 years earlier, because then they would have known, you know, all you have to do is increase demand, and then you wouldn't have had the Great Depression. Well, we don't have an excuse now. He wrote it 75 years ago. We know how to get out of this, but, you know, because the people on top basically are okay, they're kind of content to leave things where we are.
That is Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, co-author of Getting Back to Full Employment. He's also in the process of launching a director watch project, which would look at the CEO pay and compensation. And they use, for example, Home Depot. CEO Bob Nardelli, at the beginning of 2007, just over 6 years after he took the position, actually Home Depot dumped him. During his tenure, the market value of Home Depot stock fell by 40%. Lowe's, the main competitor, saw its price nearly double, yet Bob Nardelli walked away with $240 million for his efforts. So that's what they're going to be highlighting. We're also joined by Sarah Anderson, Global Economy Project Director of the Institute for Policy Studies. Her recent report is looking at the fast food CEOs raking in taxpayer-funded pay. And we're talking today about rising CEO pay. Why is this happening? What, if anything, should be done about this? If you are a CEO if you sit on a board, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about this issue? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Let's go to Drew in San Francisco. Hi, Drew. Hello, Drew.
Yes, can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I apologize. You tie the increase, the real significant increase in CEO pays to the change in corporate governance that was the result of Milton Friedman's work, I believe in the early 70s, which took the corporation's focus, the CEO's focus, away from many stakeholders to focus singularly, single-mindedly on shareholder value. And when I talk about stakeholders, there are employees, there are community, there are, of course, the shareholders. Up until that time, corporate governance really indicated that all of those things were served more. So you saw companies building buildings that had architectural significance. It wasn't all about cost control because they wanted to beautify their community, you know, or of course they paid employees more because they wanted to keep them happy and they weren't necessarily as anti-union. The thing about corporate governance is that part of course is legal framework, but as one of your guests said, another part of it is at the board level, and it's really norms. It's kind of morals or ethics that govern this, and then the analysts at Wall Street that push for the constant quarterly performance. Those things are pushing the CEO to do that, but the CEO's interests and the shareholders' interests have been locked together by that concept of corporate governance where only the shareholder value is important, and that's what has brought up CEO salaries. And the only way we can change that is to either by law you know, which I doubt is going to happen, change the way corporate governance is done. Or two, we really need to work on, for example, Wall Street analysts. It would really require a sea change in the ethics of Americans, particularly the upper level, where instead of just, benefiting their company like GE sending jobs to China, that they say, okay, it's more important that we keep them at home. And there are examples of this at work and, you know, companies that do great at it. I mean, look at Germany, you have BMW, Mercedes, and they have a corporate governance system where all of the stakeholders that I mentioned are represented. So, I think that when they're tied together like that, as long as we have this corporate governance, it's gonna stay going high.
Well, thank you for calling in, Drew. Sarah, what can we learn from other countries? I mean, when you look at the average CEO pay of Australia, for example, $4 million is the CEO average worker pay, or average CEO pay. Average worker pay is $45,000. France, $4 million average CEO pay. Average worker pay $38,000. In France, President Hollande placed a $580,000 cap on executive pay at the 52 companies where the French government holds a majority stake. And then in Switzerland, there was a measure on the ballot that would have restricted average CEO pay to about 12 times the average worker. It did go down by about 65%. But is something like this even possible in our system?
It's a fascinating question, and I've grappled with it for a long time. I think one part of the explanation is what the caller mentioned about the different rules in the European Union that require companies above a certain size to have representatives of workers on their boards. I think just having that different perspective there is one factor that explains the gap. Although CEO pay levels have been rising in other parts of the world, too, I remember when there were some first big mergers between U.S. and German companies, and the German executives looked at what their U.S. counterparts were making, and they were like, wait a minute, I think I need a raise. Mm-hmm. And that contributed to narrowing of the gaps between the U.S. and the rest of the world. Part of it is also cultural. We still have this, idea here that everyone is, if we work hard, everyone's going to make it to the top. Everyone's going to make, $2.3 billion like Mark Zuckerberg did. And also the idea that I discussed earlier that CEO pay doesn't affect the rest of us. And so I think part of our challenge is just changing that way of thinking and talking concretely about how this really is a problem for the rest of us. And if I could just take one more minute, I know we've been talking a lot about changes at the federal level, and I know a lot of people are rolling their eyeballs thinking anything will ever happen in Washington to help this problem. So I wanted to lift up just a couple of state-level creative campaigns. One is right there in California, where SEIU is trying to get an issue on the ballot in November 2014 that would limit pay for the state's nonprofit hospital CEOs to get no more than what President Obama makes, which is about $400,000 last year. It's getting at this issue of how our tax dollars are going to these public hospitals that then, goes into the pockets of these CEOs. And there's a similar one in Massachusetts. And so I just want to throw those out there. I mean, I'm here in Washington, focused mostly on national policy, but there are things that can be done at more of the state level that I think will go a long way towards helping people get it, why they have a stake in this issue.
Are there any other examples you can point to that kind of make you hopeful, Sarah?
Well, again, I think the fact that the SEC appears to be on the cusp of taking action on this CEO to worker pay ratio requirement that has been the law for 3 years under the Dodd-Frank bill, but they have been dragging their feet on it. There's a new head of the SEC now, and she seems to be moving forward and beating back all of the, the backlash coming from the industry. We're worried there will probably be a lawsuit over it once it comes out. They'll just go down all the lists of tactics for stopping anything like this. you know, all the corporate lobby tricks. But I think that that is moving forward, and it's going to bring a lot more attention to the gaps in pay between individual companies. It would lead into the color. Previously, I love the labeling idea. You know, we will have that number within, you know, a couple years of what is the CEO to worker pay gap in these companies, and we should be thinking of all different kinds of creative ways to make use of that.
And Dean, what would you add to that?
Well, I want to get back to that point that the last caller made about CEO pay coming out of the idea that only shareholders are stakeholders. I'm not happy with that, but let's leave that aside for the moment. There is no way on earth you could say you're serving the shareholders when you hand the CEO of a company that's going down the tubes, as Home Depot did, handing them $200 million. Now, they're saying, well, we had to do that. We had a contract. If these people were so stupid that they couldn't sign a contract that had contingencies in there that said if the stock price falls by 50%, you don't walk away with $200 million, then they're too dumb to get any job. Hmm. Talk about a skills gap. You know, and they routinely sign contracts like that, though. So that's why I'm saying we can't just say because the shareholders are the only stakeholders. That doesn't make sense. If they're working for the shareholders, they're doing a really bad job. They shouldn't get the minimum wage, much less hundreds of millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for pay as directors. So that's why, you know, I think that's a really good point of entry. If we can go, you know, look, you have directors here that are bozos. I'm going to mention one that will never get me funding from the Rockefeller Foundation again. Judith Rodin was a board member at Citigroup. Citigroup, they had a say on pay package where that went down. The shareholders decided that they were paying their chief executive too much money. It's almost impossible to win one of those. But they had such an incompetent, overpaid CEO that they won that. Judith Rodin pocketed $150,000. What was she doing for that money? That's more than 95% of the people in this country make in a year.
Wow. So just quickly, we've got about a half hour, 30 seconds left. What is the likelihood of these tax, the changes to the tax code, the ones that we mentioned at the beginning of the show? Do you think these have a chance?
There's been a lot of attention on the corporate loopholes issue, and a lot of, especially Democrats, talking about how they're going to get around to closing those in the broader corporate tax reform push. So, you know, now is the time to really raise awareness of the ones that could do the most to narrow these gaps. And I think this eliminating this crazy loophole that means the more companies pay their CEOs, the less they pay in taxes is just a no-brainer.
All right. And so there's a bill in the Senate and the House, and we'll put links to those right now, actually. Sarah Anderson is Global Economy Project Director of the Institute for Policy Studies. You can check out the report, Fast Food CEOs Rake in Taxpayer-Funded Pay, at our website, yourcallradio.org. And Dean Baker is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, co-author of Getting Back to Full Employment. And the new project, we'll also put that up, is called Director Watch. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What will it take to make a real transition to alternative energy? On the next Your Call, we'll speak with two UC Berkeley professors, an economist and an energy and nuclear engineer, about whether they believe we're acting fast enough to reverse climate change. What will it take to make this happen? Are we moving too slow towards low emission and renewable sources? Are you optimistic about where we're heading? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.